But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shaudel, and I'm here with co-host and supporter and producer Stu Schrager.
Good morning, Tom. How art thou?
That was good. I mean, you know, I have my friend Walter's back in town. Remember my buddy from California?
And what brought him back to town?
He you know, he surprised me the other night. He told me he was coming back in the spring, but I, you know, he never told me what date or whatever. And I'm doing a gig in Lindenhurst. I was playing at Pinot Wine Bar, and who shows up but Walter and another buddy of mine, Pete Baldy, who we all went to school together. And a lot of fun to see him. He surprised me. I was shocked and happy to see him. So.
And how did he know where you were playing?
He saw it on Facebook. On Facebook. So he came down and we had a good night. Dorio and I played there and we did a little open mic and invited people up to sing. We had a bunch of singers come up and some guitar players. It was a fun time. And if you've never been to Pinot Wine Bar, pretty cool, you know. It's right on Wellwood Avenue in Lindenhurst. And I didn't realize how Lindenhurst is like a hopping little town. You know, it's kind of flyover country for me. I don't really get down that way all that much. But I've been going there a little more recently. And, you know, there's a restaurant called Hermanas, you know, means sisters in Spanish, H-E-R-M-A-N-A-S. And, you know, Mexicali kind of food, you know, a little California Mexican. Good stuff. Anyway.
It's become a bit of a party town. There's the Belfast Gastro Pub. Sand City's a brewery that's there. I think.
The other one just opened
Blue
up,
Point
too.
Just opened up,
not
maybe.
Blue Point. No, it's another one. South Shore or something. I can see the logo and I can't figure it out. Yeah, my friend Chris Palmer, who's a talented chef in his own right, has worked in a bunch of places on Long Island. And he's taking over the food there.
Oh, really? I see. And again, it might not be one of these. Sand City.
No.
27A Brewing Company.
No.
Breslau.
No. It's the people that are in Bayshore, and I can't think of the name of it.
South Bay.
That's the one. Ta-da. Ding, ding, ding. You won. Yeah, Great South Bay.
I thought I saw a thing that Chris Palmer just moved over there.
He did, yeah. And good guy. Great guy, Chris. And really talented chef. He was at... He got into catering for a while. He was doing that thing over in Woodbury there.
Crest Hollow.
Yeah. But anyway, if you're in that neighborhood, a lot of interesting little places have opened up there, you know. My father used to go to a German restaurant, what they called George's or something, 100 years ago. And my father was anything but a restaurant connoisseur. He just liked simple stuff, you know. And anyway, he used to go to that place. And my sister took me to the Village Lantern, which is another German restaurant. I guess there's a kind of a sort of a German population over there, for whatever reason, Lindenhurst, West Babylon.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, there was a couple of German... Anyway, the Village Lantern is a German restaurant there, and, you know, there's something to be said for Sauerbraten a couple of times a year. It's kind of like corned beef on Paddy's Day. You know, you sort of have to have it, like that one time a year. And it's the same thing with Sauerbraten for me. I just love it. I think it's Germany's gift to the culinary world. But if you're in that neighborhood, again, Pinot Wine Bar, it's a nice little wine selection. The food's pretty good there. You know, I've had some really good stuff. And I think they have music like five nights a week. I think they're open Wednesday through Sunday. So, yeah, we'll be playing there periodically. If anybody's interested, you can, you know, come down and just listen in if you want to do that. Or if you want to bring a guitar, come down and play with us, you can do that. Or if you're a singer or piano player, whatever. Anyway, come on down. It's all open mic, and it's a lot of fun.
It's funny. You mentioned Sauerbraten. I was at George Martin's in Raffles Center.
Uh-huh.
Really, really nice restaurant. Quite a varied menu, and that was on there. And I started talking about it a little bit last week, but the Sauerbraten was incredible. Again, not something you normally see on most menus.
No.
And it had the...
Spätzle,
which was really tasty, and of course some red cabbage.
Yeah,
so it was really, really fun. And again, we were joking that it seems like every week is restaurant week.
It's restaurant year. Yeah, everybody's trying to promote. You know, it's sad what's going on in the restaurant business, man. It's harder and harder. More places are closing. I see, you know, the indicator for me, the canary in the coal mine for me is the diners. You know, diners were always that place to go where you could have a good meal, not spend a whole lot of money, and you could pretty much get whatever you wanted any time, night or day. I mean, if you want to go in there at 5 in the afternoon and have eggs over light, you had it. You know, if you want to go in there at 11 in the morning and have lamb chops with mashed potatoes, you could get it. But, you know, the diners, they can't operate the way they used to. And you know, I remember there used to be 24 hours. Every diner was open 24 hours.
Again, pardon me if I'm redundant. A couple of weeks ago, went to a concert Saturday night. On the way back, wanted to get some ice cream. Figured, you know, you go to the diner. Mm. We were in at UBS Arena.
Yeah.
So traveling east, we went to someplace in Rockville Center. No. I mean, where we went was actually the old Jan's for those who...
Oh, yeah, Jan's, sure.
Days of yesteryear.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And then it became International Cafe or something, and whatever it is now. No. Closed at 10 o'clock or something.
Yeah.
We were in Raffle Center, and next town is Freeport. Go to the Freeport Imperial Diner. Get there at 11 o'clock. The lights are still on, and the guy greets us to say, just lock in the doors, my friends.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you know, it used to be 24 hours. Now it's, I was in a diner the other night. I very rarely go to diners, and for no other reason other than, you know, it's not my meal period generally. I think a diner's is breakfast, you know. And so after this gig we did it, you know, Mike was starving. I was playing with Mike and then Val and I, we were starving, right? So we go to the diner, Lindenhurst Diner, whatever. And I don't know, I had a burger. What else you order at a diner at that time, right? And one had a grilled cheese and Mike had a club sandwich or whatever it was. And the guy came over at like 5 to 12 and said, you know, we're closing. you know, like, yeah, get the hell out of here, you know, kind of thing. And it was very unceremoniously, you know, tossed out of the diner at midnight.
But tell me, as behind the scenes, you were just saying, you know, such a varied... unbelievable amount of entrees on a menu. I mean, yeah. A diner menu is 6 pages.
It's silly is what it is.
How do they have an inventory turn on the food to allow them to do that? I mean, well, obviously eggs and omelets is, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, some of it's sleight of hand. I mean, you know, you take this cheese, that cheese, the other cheese. Now you have 3 items on your omelets, right? Now you get one with Swiss, one with American, one with that. And you list them all, you know.
But that's easy. You know, and is there any truth to the specials maybe being fresher? I mean, but you'll see on a traditional diner menu, because we went to the Golden Reef over in Rockville Center, actually.
Right.
And they're the people that also took over the old Carlton. Now it's called the Lantern or something.
Oh, yeah, Lantara or something like that. Yeah.
So, but, you know, again, the menu's incredible. You know, you can get a pork chop, you can get a steak, you can get a BLT.
Yeah, I don't think it's
and
all
a
that.
Salad today is $20-something.
Well, that's the thing that's killing the diners, you know. They can't keep up with the the price increases. And, you know, they used to be, I remember Mr. Libby, we were talking about this the other night, my friends and I, you know, Libby's Diner. I mean, he would have, you know, 12 guys sleeping in a basement, you know, working for $3 an hour, you know, with room and board. And, you know,
I'm telling you, a Cobb salad or a chef salad, if I'm not mistaken, is about $25.
Yeah.
And I was disappointed because most places when you order turkey, it's turkey breast, it's that processed stuff.
Sure.
I always used to find that the diner, that it was always fresh turkey.
Yeah.
And one of the places that I go to, they do it interesting. They like roll the meat that would be in a chef salad, so that is a roll.
Yeah, and pinwheel kind of looking.
Wheel,
yeah.
Pinwheel type.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden there was like processed turkey in it, which pissed me off. But so I have to be a little more
discerning.
Discerning. Thank
yes.
you. But again, it's crazy, and even. The price point thing, we were at George Martin, again, fine restaurant, everything is priced well. I'm not complaining about pricing, just the scene that occurred that night. So it was 3 of us, you know, Carrie got her own entree or a couple of appetizers that she used as an entree. I had my sauerbraten, and my buddy was talking, thinking steak, and we hadn't been out for a while. He's a recent widow.
Mm-hmm.
I figured, yeah, you know, go for it.
Yeah.
And then when I got the bill later, it was just funny because, like, for argument's sake, the sauerbraten was $24.95 or something.
Yeah.
And then there was a $75 steak.
Yeah, well, that's what they cost, you know? I mean, if you, you know, I don't know what George Martin's doing, but, you know, if you buy them prime, I mean, the steaks cost you $25, $30, you know, to put out. What are you going to charge? I mean, it's just, again, I'm getting back to the canary in a coal mine diners, man. They're just, they're the first, you know, they're like the infantry that hits the beach first, you know, and gets all torn up, you know. But they can't keep up.
But delving into this thing with the, you know, freshness of, and again, it wasn't a one-time thing. You know, as you said, we're of age that we frequented diners for more than 40 years.
Sure, yeah.
And again, there would be anything from, you know, whatever the special was today, the stuffed flounder with spinach and feta,
yeah,
to the meatloaf. And again, how did they keep everything fresh? Or,
they don't.
Or is it frozen?
It is. It's all frozen. I mean, look, the bottom line is, you know yourself, if you have, you know, something to do on Saturday, there's a good chance you're going to get it done. If you have 40 things to do on Saturday, there's a good chance some of them are going to either be really poorly done or not done at all.
But take that, stuffed sole,
right,
that's got the spinach and feta in it. If that's frozen, how do they quick, I guess I'm brain thick, but is that something they put in the microwave to defrost and then cook it? What's the secret?
No, probably they just take out as many as they think they're going to need for a day or two, you know?
Oh.
You know, look, there's a lot of, you know, I remember, you know, years ago when I used to dabble in herbs, let's say, right? And I remember leaving the OBI, remember the OBI on the South Shore, you know, at like 3 or 4 in the morning and coming over the bridge and hitting Babylon after dabbling in an herb and, you know, being hungry, right? So we'd stop at the diner and my two friends would be going, you know, I'll have 2 eggs over and I'll have an omelet. I'll be like, can I get the lamb chops, please, with the,
really?
You know, the mashed potatoes. And I could just see this poor cook, you know, prying them out of the freezer,
wow,
with a crowbar.
See, my go-to was, and gee whiz, I should be 100,000 pounds, but it was like cheeseburger deluxe and a black and white ice cream soda or something.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it was...
You know, and you hope you didn't bump into your parents.
Yeah, well, I haven't done any of that stuff since like the middle 70s, so thank God I can... That's why the diners are closing. We don't do that anymore. I couldn't stay open at 3 in the morning. And I felt bad for those guys. They'd be dealing with drunks and stuff, you know. No wonder they closed.
But that's the other thing I always wonder. Every diner had a bar behind the cashier.
Yeah.
And, like, who drinks at a diner?
I want to stand there and have a cocktail, you know. I was just in a new... There's a new diner out in Riverhead. It's not new. It was called the Family Diner. Now it's called the Peconic Diner or something. Anyway, it was new owners. And they renovated the whole thing. And to me, diners need booths, right? The more booths, the merrier. Booths and a counter. That's all you need. Well, they got tables in there. It just doesn't look the same. It doesn't have the same vibe for me, right? And I don't know who bought it. And I don't know who's running it. But they're not... It seems to me they're not experienced diner people. Because the service is haywire. It's almost like a Benny Hill episode. The only thing missing is the yakety sax music, you know. Anyway, so I order a Greek salad with shrimp, which is my go-to thing for lunch in a diner. And it comes with like an eyedropper of dressing. And I'm not one of those, you know, dressing on the side. I mean, wash it, man. I mean, give me as much dressing as possible. I'm trying to make the lettuce slide, you know. I don't want to get jokes. So anyway, I said to the kid, comes in his little cup, you know. So I said to the kid, can I get another cup of the dressing? You know, I'm happy to pay for it or whatever. Oh, yeah, yeah. So there's this like Greek salad dressing, like it's like a vinaigrette, you know. So he comes out with this Russian dressing stuff. I'm like, no, that's not the one. This is the one, you know. Oh, okay, goes back, right? Now he's got Caesar dressing. No, that ain't it either. You know, I'm trying to, behind, try door number 3.
So that's interesting that you talk about that. So... A couple of weeks ago, went to a restaurant and they served a salad bowl and they brought on a plate like an assortment of dressings and they were in containers.
Yeah.
They said they got involved with that during COVID and they just kept doing that instead a dish of a bowl of dressing.
Dressing, out. Yeah.
But like last night, I was up in Huntington. at one of the restaurants, and I ordered a burger, and it came with two containers. And one was like a white. I actually didn't taste it. I should have done that because just to know what it was.
Yeah.
The other was ketchup. But you have to really be smart and strategic because once the food was dropped, this was like a restaurant. It was a street side restaurant bar type thing.
Right.
But once the food was dropped, there was nobody to get me my
disappear,
ketchup.
Yeah.
Additional ketchup.
Yeah, yeah.
So. I don't know. Like, there was nothing better than in the old days, you know, having a bottle of ketchup on the table.
Yeah.
Even if it was empty, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Par for the course.
Yeah. Yeah, and then all the dried ketchup on the cap, you know. But yes. It kind of adds to the experience, you know. You know, so.
Or you'd watch them filling the old box.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And, you know, they take the cloth they clean the table with to clean the top of the
bottle.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, it's funny. It's like service is a thing that I think I've always said that, you know, I don't believe that great food can rescue bad service, but I think great service can rescue mediocre food. I think that if you have, you know, an attentive wait staff and people who are trained, it enhances your experience tremendously. And, you know, we spend a lot of time on training the staff. Now, not all of them, you know, pass the test. I mean, you know, we don't have a lot of valedictorian waiters, but, you know, we put the effort in, and it's so important. And I always told people that work for me, I said, listen, I want everybody who comes in this restaurant to feel like Norm on Cheers. You know, when they come in, I mean, you ever see Norm walking? Norm, everybody goes, right? And, you know, what do you have, Mr. whatever his name is, you know, an unusual kind of thing. That's how everybody wants to feel when they go to a restaurant, whether it's a first time in or you're a regular. I remember going to the restaurant Tesoro, right? It's an Italian restaurant, Old Country Road in Westbury.
Road, sure.
Yeah. So I walked in there with my girlfriend. And the guy goes, oh, it's so good to see you again. And she and I'd never been there before, right? But she goes, who are you here with? I mean, I wasn't here at all. Well, how come he recognizes? He doesn't recognize me. He's just, you know, doing that Italian restaurant maitre d' thing, you know. I was in trouble for 5 minutes. She thinks I'm, you know, in there with somebody else or whatever. It was hilarious. I'm like, looking at the guy, dude, you're killing me here, you know. It's funny. That's what I mean. I think people want to be recognized and not so much fawned over. I mean, there's some people who want that, but, you know, just attended to. You know, I think it's
that's
important.
That's very funny. So I went out to dinner one night with a couple of people, and I was entertaining one of my clients who was with Suffolk AME. It's the union that represents the municipal workers out in Suffolk County.
Uh-huh.
So one of my guests, wife calls and says, what are you up to? He goes, I'm having dinner with Stu and Amy.
Uh-oh.
He goes, what? What are you doing with Amy? Who's Amy? And he goes, A-M-E. You said Amy. Stu, please talk
to them. Yeah. You get me off the hook here, please.
So you were just mentioning Tesoro, and it's a call place, Westbury.
Yeah.
Restaurant. Somebody recommended Cafe Fratelli to me. Is
yeah,
that
yeah.
One that strikes your
yeah, I know where
mindset?
It is. That's right down on, it's right between Albany and Evelyn Avenue on Old Country Road, right across from where Fortunoff's was, or that whatever mall. I don't remember the name of the mall. Yeah, I've eaten there twice, I think, and always had a good meal. You know, yeah, they do a nice job.
They're doing Mother's Day there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so it should be interesting.
Yeah, they do, you know, traditional Italian food. I mean, you got to know the menu when you go in there, but they execute really well. I mean, I think it's a pretty cool place.
So I'm going to hand you a page from a magazine, and it's I guess, a promotional piece about Charleston. I guess that's South Carolina.
Yes, yeah.
But tell me if the food pictures get you salivating.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. I mean, oysters always get me. Yeah.
What is that caviar like in a hard, like a poached
yeah,
egg or
like,
something?
Yeah, they use like an egg custard, and they're serving in the eggshell. There's a tool that you can take the top of the egg off with, and then they fill it generally with some kind of a custard
yeah, so
or whatever.
I look at this. It's got beautiful, you know, pictures of the scenery in Charleston, South Carolina, again, some oysters on the half shell and this caviar and egg dish, and... you know, a glass of wine. You know, what could be bad?
Well, I think that goes to the thought that, you know, people eat with their eyes. You know, 90% of their eyes. If it looks good, chances are your mind is going to tell you it tastes good. You know,
And now my next experiment with you is I'm handing you a...
There's a copy of Playboy. What are you doing here, Stu?
wrong magazine. Sorry,
Tom. Sorry. Hey, whoops. Yeah.
So this is a wine club that's soliciting members.
Uh-huh.
And it's got about 10 or 12 different wines. And again, the average Joe that gets this mail piece and they look at it, are we supposed to recognize any of those vineyards or...
But that's not a bad thing, honestly. You know, there's wines that we all know, you know, Cake Bread, Silver Oak, Camus, you know, all of those, Sonoma Couture. For a couple of reasons, some of the reason is that some of the wines are great and, you know, people love them. And other reasons are we're a label-conscious society, I think, on Long Island for sure. And, you know, if you look at the parking lot of any of my restaurants up here or the club or even outside... out east, I mean, you know, you're going to see Mercedes and BMW and all this, you know, type of labels that people, you know, you go to the Americana, right, shopping center. I mean, it's Prada, it's Coach, it's Hirschfelder's, it's, you know, it's all these names. It's not Acme, it's not, you know, what's the other one, Old Navy or anything like that. It's just the higher end brands. And I think wine is the same thing. If you go to a lot of the steakhouses, you know, I always refer to their wine list as the usual suspects, you know, and it's wines that sell themselves. And generally what I think happens in a lot of these steakhouses is they price the wine very high, thinking, okay, if somebody bites, then I made a little money on it. And then 1 or 2 days a week, they have wine down wine night, you know, where they sell them at the prices they should have had them on in the first place. And then, you know, and get rid of them that way. It's all marketing ploys and tricks.
So refresh my memory. I know there's Stag's Leap and there's another level of that wine, I believe.
Well, there's two Stag's Leap vineyards. One is Stag's Leap Cellars and one is Stag's Leap Vineyard, I think.
Well, here's my question. So I learned that Stag's Leap is a very nice wine.
Yes.
Again, I might be that psychological degenerate because it costs more money that it's a good wine.
No, you're not a psychological degenerate.
But I walk into the local wine shop, and then I also see The Stag by St. Hubert's.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Stag's Leap is $85 a bottle, and St. Hubert's is $15.99. But... again, everything is confusing. You know, if I'm walking around, then, you know, I have this memory of the Stag's Leap, and I see the other, and don't ask a question. I'm assuming that that's similar or from the same vineyard, but maybe just a, you know.
I don't think it's a coincidence. I think people, you know, think this out. And, you know, so if somebody makes the mistake, they sold it. Listen, I'm a victim of it, you know. I had Cool Fish, Passion Fish, Starfish. All of a sudden, there's a fat fish, a cow fish, or this fish, or that fish. I mean, we got a school of them all of a sudden, you know. They say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, I guess, or whatever. To me, it was kind of like, really, can you do this with a straight face? I mean, wow. You know, it's kind of... And I can't tell you how many people, you know, thought that I owned three or four of those. You know, there was a Showfish in Montauk, which, I mean, that's stretching it, you know. Yeah, whatever. I guess, you know, thanks for the nod, boys. But, you know, it seems to me that, you know, you're kind of jumping on the bandwagon, I guess they would call it, for whatever reason. You know, come up with your own stuff. It's it's kind of fun to do anyway. But, you know, getting back to the wine thing and you know, with the labels, there's so much good juice out there. I mean, I you know, drink a lot of wine all year, and I taste probably 500-600 wines a year, you know, in the trade tastings and stuff. And I got to tell you, I had this sort of, not an argument, but a discussion with a guy who says, this is some wines that are terrible. I don't find that to be true. I haven't tasted a really terrible wine in a long time. I've tasted wines that I didn't like as much as others, but certainly they're not bad. I mean, the technology is phenomenal, the knowledge that's out there now. I mean, I was talking to Rich Harbeck Olson, who's the winemaker at Bedell the other day, and he was explaining to me how, you know, in the reason that the Sauvignon Blancs from New Zealand have this grassiness and this, you know, acidity and pineapple-y and all these flavors that we associate with New Zealand wine is because now there's so much production down there. They have so many grapes that they're harvesting them early. And so the Brix levels, the sugar levels are so low, and that's what contributes to that grassiness. And what they do is they manipulate it later with sugar and you know, other chemicals or whatever. They even have this stuff now. It's oils that almost mimic the flavor of barrel aging. Wow. So there's a lot of manipulation going on out there. But the result is, you know, it tastes fine. It's not really my thing. I'm, you know, more like I want to see wine that's made organically and, you know, and grown. And I'm looking for artisan wines. A lot of these wines are just beverages. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just that they're formulaic. And, you know, every year they have the recipe and they make it, you know, in these big tanks and they produce a lot. Nothing wrong with that. That's fine. That's what made Gallo Gallo and Yellowtail Yellowtail. You know, there's a market for all of that stuff. Personally, I'm looking for artisans. I'm looking for people who, you know, think like I do about food and wine. And you know, I'm not a cheesecake factory guy. You know, I'm going to go to a restaurant where the chef has some talent, and not that they don't over there, but you know, it's a different thing. I want a guy who's really into the food, who's really going to give me something. We went to Sorrelina, up in Boston 2 weeks ago. I mean, the food was just phenomenal. You know, they had this, lamb neck ravioli that was just perfect. I mean, it had a little
I'm still intrigued mint by that because I think it's a Jewish thing, but chicken necks,
yeah,
and the butt of the chicken.
They call it the Pope's nose in the Italian section there. You know, they're always making fun of the Pope.
But I vaguely remember.
Well, the chicken necks don't have a lot of meat in them. You know, I mean, you got to kind of work it. You know, it's like a turkey neck. But the lamb necks are bigger, and what they do is they braise the meat out of the neck. And the reason they use a neck is it's really inexpensive because nobody wants it, right? So you get these lamb necks. It's like oxtails, you know?
That's what I was just going to ask you.
Yeah, same kind of thing. And, you know, you braise the meat. The oxtail meat is great. I mean, it makes a great – the bones make a great stock. There's a lot of gelatin in them, you know. The meat, it almost coats your tongue, oxtail, you know, when it's made right. And oxtail ravioli is one of my favorite all-time preparations. But they did this lamb neck ravioli that was just spectacular, you know. And then they did a bolognese, and they whipped in some marrow butter, you know, bone marrow butter, which really kind of not only is butter gives the sauce a gloss and a little bit of richness, but the marrow kind of kicked its ass a little.
When you talk about that, is that almost like when you get a pappardelle, a ragu? It's like shredded meat.
Yeah, yeah, bolognese, yeah. Yeah, but the addition of the bone marrow butter really sent it, you know, singing. You know, I said, yeah, I'm going to cop that idea. Because I use bone marrow in other ways, but the butter was brilliant. I really thought it was great.
I was just talking about Stag's Leap as one of the vineyards, and then I think I found what I was looking for, which is Stag's Leap Artemis.
Artemis, yeah.
Are they?
That's a proprietary blend. So that's Artemis is their upper echelon wine. That's the one the winemaker goes, I'm going to do this my way. And every year the blend probably changes. I mean, it's not a recipe like some of these wines are. So what it'll do is, I believe Artemis is a Bordeaux blend. I'm guessing it's Cab Merlot, Cab Franc, Malbec, and maybe some Petit Verdot.
So now I'm getting real crazy. You know, it's like show and tell here today.
Yeah.
If I show you this picture.
Right.
Do you know what wine that is?
Orrin Swift.
What is it?
Oh, it's an Orrin Swift wine. I'm not sure which one it is.
We had it somewhere.
Is that Machete?
Maybe. Yeah. I believe that's what it is.
Yeah.
So the label looks like a ransom note. It's like a collage of...
Yeah, it looks like a serial killer, you know, asking for...
But delightful wine. It's funny, when I was at Frank's in Rockville Center a couple of weeks ago, for whatever reason, they kept a lot of empty bottles around. That was one of them. And it reminded Carrie and I of that wine. We knew of it somehow.
Yeah.
And then I was shopping for the Passover. My mom asked me to get some wines. All of a sudden, the Schrager family's gotten very sophisticated. We got to have a red. We got to have a white. We got to have a rosé.
No more Manischewitz for you.
And the white has to be Pinot, because that's what my sister drinks.
Of course.
So, but I decided I was going to... I don't drink a lot of wine, and I wanted to have an experience of almost like a flight.
Uh-huh.
So I did a little bit of shopping. I found a Louis Jardot Rosé.
There you go.
It was interesting. Yeah, yeah. I'm familiar with that vineyard. And then I got whatever else I got. And I saw, again, I went to the wine guy and I showed him this picture. And he goes, it's right over here.
Yeah.
And $40 for the bottle, which was a little more than what I was looking to spend for this occasion.
Yeah.
But it was the last bottle. So I grabbed it and I brought it home to Carrie and I said, you know, this isn't the you know a cheap toss away bottle. Make sure the kids don't drink it. So she puts a post-it on it. Stay away. This is for mom. But we were trying to figure out and she go, you know, I told her what it cost and she goes, we brought that to somebody. And I remembered and it comes all back to me. This coming week, I'm going down to Florida. Friends of ours have an annual Kentucky Derby party, and this is the family that has a bourbon room, and it's the size of our studio, which is probably about 20 by 20, and 16-foot ceiling, and it's got like library type shelving,
sure,
and one of those ladders on a rail,
nice,
and it's from floor to ceiling, different bourbons.
Wow.
It's crazy. And there's one bourbon, Ballantine or something.
Yeah, Ballantine.
That you there's a different top. There's like 12 different tops.
Oh, really?
And so he has the whole collection.
Yeah, yeah.
On a special
pedestal
or whatever. But we remembered we weren't going to bring a $100 bottle of bourbon. It certainly didn't seem like it would be something that would be memorable. Cause
it's
got
a ton of it.
We had brought this wine, and it turned out, he goes, wow, that was really good stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's good.
So
you do have to label them. I had a house in East Hampton forever, right? And when you have a house in the Hamptons, you gain a lot of friends, right? I still want to go out there. So my friend Ellen, who is a friend, anyway, she goes out there with a couple of friends, says, hey, can I use the house for the weekend? Yeah, go ahead, you know. So she goes out there. I said, if you look in my refrigerator, you'd get a kick out of it because all I have is water, Diet Peach Snapple, and white wine, you know, a ton of it. So I said to her, I said, yeah, you know, go ahead, help yourself, you know. I said, you got a ton of wine in the refrigerator if you want a white, and downstairs the reds, the whole thing, right? So Ellen, who knows nothing about wine, just happens to pick $150 Riesling that I had I was saving. I'm like, what are the chances? You know, I thought the bottle was nice. It was easy to grab because the thing was so tall and thin. Thanks a lot, you know.
It was also funny at the Passover Seder. Again, I brought these different wines. For whatever reason, Mom only put out the rosé and the white wine. And coincidentally, they were both twist-offs, which was surprising.
No, they've got more and more wineries that go into Stolen Caps, and, you know, for good reason.
She goes, can you open these for me? And, like, you know, it was well too easy. Just
yeah, you know, well, they lose 8%, 8 to 10% of all corked wines are gone, you know? I mean, so that's, you know, think about your own personal. If you took a 10% cut in pay, it would hurt, you know?
And then the best was, then I go in, I realized the red wine was missing, so
yeah.
I went looking for it. I go in the refrigerator, and there's a bottle of whatever the brand is that Costco carries.
I wouldn't know.
But my mom had to do a job on the cork. It was like a work of art. She had to shave it down to get it back into the...
they call it whittling, I think,
in
the South.
It was whittling, for whittling, sure. Yeah. That reminds me of my Boy Scout days.
So I did a Seder at the club the other night. This was last Tuesday?
Yes.
What fun, man. I don't get a chance to cook like that. It's not really in my lane. You know, chopped liver, which I can't eat anyway. I think it's cat food to me, you know. But, I made chopped liver. I made matzo ball soup, which was fun. And we have a woman at the club. She's a corker, you know. When I first got there, she always had this sour face on, and she was, you know, she would yell at me, I didn't like the meat, you know, and she's carrying on. So I decided I'm going to try and win her over. So I used to tease her a little bit. Oh, you're back again. The food was so bad, you came back, and she gave you grumble or whatever. And so I started giving her a shot every once in a while, and she kind of got it, you know. And so we have this different relationship now. So I went out to the table, and she was sitting out there. And I said, I just want to come out and wish you a happy Passover and see how everything was. And she goes, you know, the short ribs were very good tonight. You're getting there. You know, she starts, you know, like, pretty soon I'll even like your food or whatever, you know. And she cracks a smile. So I said to her, I said, listen, you're not going to yell at me tonight? So she goes, no, I'm not going to yell at you tonight. I said, well, then that's what makes this night different than any other night. And then she completely lost it laughing. So we have this completely different relationship now, which is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And she has a great sense of humor. And, you know, a husband teaser. Yeah, I said, yeah, she's not going to yell at me. Yeah, she yells at me all the time, you know. But she's a very nice lady and a lot of fun and a pretty good golfer. So it's just a, you know, I think that I want to, you know, kind of bring this into the bigger picture where, you know, it comes down to service in restaurants. And I think that, you know, most times when somebody has a complaint, they're legitimate. And I think that legitimate complaints have to be addressed and dealt with. And, you know, I'll give you some examples if you want. But, and there are some illegitimate complaints. And for the most part, you know, those, you know, I kind of, you know, I'll give them lip service, but, you know, I generally wave them off. And, you know, here's an example. We had a gentleman in the restaurant send back the olive oil because the olive oil was rancid. He said the olive oil that we served with the bread, he said it wasn't good and, you know, take it back. I can't eat this, you know. So the waitress brought it back into the kitchen. She says to me, the guy says the olive oil is bad. Now, I know it's not bad. So I said, she's all right, what do you want me to do? I said, well, put the bottle down, wait 3 minutes, and bring it back out. She goes, you can't be serious. I said, I'm dead serious. There's nothing wrong with the olive oil. So she puts it down. She brings it back out. He uses it on his bread. That's better. Thank you for changing the olive oil. And we said, no problem, you know. So there's an example of a legitimate complaint, illegitimate complaint. Now, legitimate complaints, we had a guy come in with a party of eight. I think it was 8 or 10 people. It was at Cool Fish years ago on a Sunday afternoon. And Sunday at Cool Fish was when I had the B team in. I always had to work on Sunday because none of the A team wanted to work on Sundays. So we had the B team in there. And we screwed up this guy's reservation from the time he made the phone call right through dessert. It was just unbelievable. Conspiracy of errors and things that went wrong or whatever. So the guy's furious. He calls me out of the kitchen. And he's got his finger up in my chest. And let me tell you, I said, listen, before you get going, I know what happened here. I know we have a reputation to live up to. I know we did nothing to support that. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to come back again with the same amount of people, and I want you to hurt me. I want you to order double appetizers. You can have 3 salads if you want, Louis the 13th, 20-year-old scotches. I don't care. Just make this so painful for me that I never let it happen again. Now the guy's starting to laugh. He goes, no, I just want... I said, no, I want you to come back, and I want you to hurt me. So he came back with 6 people. He didn't do any of that. He just had dinner, and we shared a glass of wine and a laugh, and he's been a customer ever since. So that's the difference between, I think, you know, addressing a situation and converting somebody over. You know, you kill them with kindness kind of thing. You know, listen, we make mistakes. I mean, it's human error. I mean, I'm at the mercy of 25, 30 employees every day. You know, it's the weak link in the chain that busts the chain, right? I mean, you know, the one, you know, waiter or busboy can ruin the whole experience no matter what I do in the kitchen. But, you know, the illegitimate complaints, those are the ones I like to have fun with, like the guy with the olive oil. So... Anyway, I think that, you know, and not to get philosophical here, but bigger in life. I mean, I think that if you treat people kindly and, you know, you kind of, you know, you don't know what they're going through. Some people are grumpy, some people are nasty, whatever. And, you know, I tend to avoid them. But when I confront them, it's like, hey, relax, you know.
No.
Not that big a deal.
So I just want to review this feast that my mother created for Passover. I give her a lot of credit. It's just so funny because...
And how old's your mom? Is she like in her 80s? Or?
Yeah. And she goes, I can't do this for 2 nights, but there's enough food for a week.
Yeah, right. So I can do it for 7. This is not 2.
I mean, again, you'll turn your nose up at half of this stuff because we had gefilte fish.
Oh, God, please.
That was jarred.
I didn't know they were running.
But she said she used to make gefilte fish, and she used to make a mock gefilte fish for people that couldn't
tolerate
fish.
Yeah, I used to do that too. I used to make the canals.
So we had the and the gefilte fish, you have to have red and white horseradish.
Yeah.
We had a hard-boiled egg that part of the satis.
The plate, right?
In the
salt water. Yeah.
We had horosis, which is symbolic of the mortar.
Yeah, the mortar.
Which is walnuts and apple and wine. And cinnamon, I guess.
And honey.
And honey, maybe.
I'm a better Jew than you. I know what's going on.
There you go. Yeah. And then mom made a spinach souffle.
Nice.
A sweet kugel.
Nice.
My sister made your favorite, this sweet potato casserole.
Oh, God, not with the marshmallows, please.
Course.
Oh, jeez, I can't. That's not a Seder thing.
We had turkey with stuffing and gravy.
Nice.
And we had brisket.
Great.
We had cranberry that came out of the jar.
Oh, I love that.
And we also had the cranberry compote my mom makes with some crushed pineapple. And I guess, I don't know where she gets the cranberry from and stuff.
Well, you can find them. You can find them. Yeah, they're around.
But to say it was a feast is.
Yeah, it's like Thanksgiving with a religious tent to it, you know. Yeah. Listen, it's funny about Seder's because I was talking to a bunch of people that came in, the Bauer family, actually. And the one guy, after dinner, he says to me, so did you grow up in a Jewish house? I'm like, no. He says, where'd you learn to cook this food? I'm like, food's food. It is what it is. I mean, brisket's no harder to cook than short ribs or whatever. It's the same process, But I kind of really get into it. So when I start my matzo ball soup, I start with bones. I mean, I don't start with like bases or anything like that.
Oh, my mom starts like 2 weeks out.
Yeah, yeah.
She made the soup.
Yeah.
And just like you said, one night I'm over there, she's sending me home with all sorts of chicken because she was, she didn't need all the chicken after
making
the
chicken.
Soup. So Kerry's dogs had a feast because she's been feeding them. Chicken, so she dices it up and throws it in with their bagged stuff. But and then she made the matzo balls. Those were also frozen or whatever.
Yeah.
The brisket she prepares also. But the turkey, we had a fresh kill, which I picked up over at Zorn's. And previous to getting the turkey, like a couple of days before the celebration, I had to get the rendered chicken fat so Mom could make the
chopped
schmaltz, liver.
Yeah. Yeah, chopped liver, God. I made 5 pounds for the other night, Maybe we sold a pound of it or whatever. And the manager, Don, loves it, right? He eats it on the matzah and whatever. I'm like, how can you? I can't even be your friend anymore if you eat this stuff. It's like, ugh.
But the world is crazy. Some things just can't get anymore. I had to get parsley for something.
Yeah.
And dill. I went to Stop and Shop there. Dill.
Really?
I ended up going to Trader Joe's, and they have it sort of fresh but sort of packaged. And then soup greens. Why all of a sudden is there a shortage of soup greens?
Yeah, maybe it's the holiday. Maybe everybody's, it's like, trying to get a turkey on Thanksgiving last minute. They're all gone. I don't know. But those traditions are so important. I think that, regardless of your religious beliefs or ethnicity, to pass those traditions on to the kids, and you hope they pass them on. You got to keep that stuff alive, You have to do that.
I get a kick, though. Real strict Jewish practice is keeping kosher.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is basically just keeping meat away from dairy. But so there's a lot of delicatessens. When you say delicatessen, it sounds very ethnic. When you say deli, it's not.
Yeah.
But, these Jewish delis are like sort of going away. Pastrami King is gone or whatever. Ben's closes during the holiday, but
yeah,
I always stop by there to get my pickles and sauerkraut and sweet
nice.
Peppers.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of other places called Pastrami something, but I get a kick out of the ridiculousness of it. Again, it's kosher style.
Yeah,
it's catering to the Jewish community, and I go in there. This was during COVID. Everybody was closed. This place was open, so went there to get some brisket to take out or whatever for the holiday, and they give it to me with bread. But it was, it just seemed so obviously wrong to me. I guess I shouldn't be shocked and. Whatever. But it was just funny because it's Passover.
Yeah.
You don't eat bread.
Yeah,
and they're
yeah,
giving
yeah.
you, your slice.
Yeah, what about the unleavened thing? Yeah, Well, my friend Don, who was the manager of Mill River, he worked at Seawayne for years, which is primarily
sure,
a Jewish
that's
club,
in,
right?
The Five Towns.
Yeah. And he said, one time they had some kind of dinner. There was a shrimp, and one of the guys said, shrimp, how can you serve shrimp? He says, what are you talking about? We serve 200 pounds of bacon a week we're going through here.
So, that's a very funny story. And I just told this to somebody the other day. So my grandmother lived in Fresno, California. She was from New York. She married somebody that was from D.C., and when he retired, they moved out out west.
Right.
So we went to visit, and, you know, we would celebrate the Seder, and then the rest of the time we'd go sightseeing. So we're in San Francisco, and, you know, in a seafood restaurant, and they go to order lobster, and Grandma goes, "It's Passover." Oh, what? It's not bread. And just like you said, probably if we went for breakfast, I would have gotten bacon and eggs.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But actually, and the one thing I kick myself forever about is everybody that goes out to San Francisco tries albacore. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, albacore, yeah. It's like tuna family.
No, then there's something else.
Dungeness crab?
Abalone.
Abalone?
Abalone.
Abalone. That's albacore. That's close. Abalone, yeah. Abalone is like a shellfish.
And then conch? Is it say conch or conch?
Conch. I mean, it's pronounced conch. It says conch.
And that's
conch.
Out of a shell, too.
Yeah, that's the shell that you put up to your ear, you know, to hear that conical thing, you know.
But to harvest the fish from that, or the meat, whatever you want to call it, is that something you can get without breaking the shell, or you have to break the shell?
No, you can pull them out. You know, it's not easy, but
so
you
can. So it's almost like a snail in a sense?
Yeah, it's a big snail. Yeah, that's kind of what it is. Yeah, they use the foot, you know, it's that one foot that comes out. That's what they use. And it's tough, you know. It's like conch. I mean, conch's got to be pounded or cooked for a long time, you know. Scungili is the same thing, you know. Scungili is just conch in Italian, you know, really.
Oh.
Yeah, so, but, you know, they slice it thin, they cook it forever. Because otherwise, like rubber, you know. But, the religious thing to me is kind of funny. And if you take, I don't know about Muslim, whatever, the other religions, Buddhism. But if you take the big three, like, you know, Catholicism, Judaism, and Protestantism, or whatever. You know, I'm good with the top tier stuff, you know, don't kill, don't cheat, don't lie, don't steal. I'm good with all that, right? It's when they get into the B and C level stuff that I tend to fade away, you know. Can't eat meat on Friday, you can't have milk with dairy and meat and all, you know. It's like, what? I get why it started, you know. You know, from the meat on Friday, they said, you know, put a little fish in your body and stop eating all that stuff. It's not good for you. And, you know, the meat with dairy, there was no refrigeration, you know, so things were going sour. But I really don't think, with all the stuff that's going on in the world, that God is really concerned all that much about a hamburger on a Friday night. You know, I think he can get away with that stuff. It's kind of like a misdemeanor, you know. It's not a felony.
Well, not to get deep into it, unfortunately, because we're near the end of the show, we won't. But this craziness that's going on college campuses about the Middle East.
I can't even.
Specifically what's going on in Colombia. I mean,
it just shows you what they're teaching these kids, you know.
And the nonsense, the thing that Alex Baldwin experienced
nuts,
the other day.
Nuts.
And even if he was wrong, you got to say there's something wrong with somebody shoving a phone in your face and like refusing to like retreat.
No, they're aggressive, these kids, you know. And because none of them's ever gotten punched in the face. I mean, that'll cure all of that stuff. One shot in the head, I don't mean to be, you know.
But these people, again, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But I guess there's a crossing of the line. But when they're threatening other people, and either they don't get arrested or punished, or they get arrested and immediately it's
they get
like,
let off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only to do it again. It's strange. And actually, again, I don't have the solution. Again, I guess both parties feel they're right. But the thing that drives me crazy, and as a parent, and it reminds me of COVID a little bit, but that was an act of nature or whatever.
An act of China.
But if I'm paying $60,000 to send my kid to college, and now they're sent home and told to take to work remotely, there's something wrong with that.
I want my money back.
But you don't get it back.
Of course not. You know, these are indoctrination camps. They're not colleges anymore. I'll give you an example. How long and how tolerated do you think five guys in white hoods walking through Columbia University saying, "We don't want any blacks here"? How long do you think they would last in there? They'd be taken out, you know, suspended, thrown out, whatever. Why is it tolerated? Because it's Jewish. I don't get it, man. It's just the things that they're saying and they're doing. Some of these kids should go to Gaza and live under Hamas for a couple of weeks. You know, the best one I ever saw was they had gays for Hamas or whatever it was, the rainbow flag. I mean, he'd be the first people thrown off a building. I mean, what are you doing, you know? You have any idea?
With all this unrest and everything, it's amazing that I was talking to some people the other day, and they said that they're sending their child to Birthright, which is, I guess, if you're Jewish, there's organizations that subsidize your ability to take a trip to this, in quotes, the homeland.
Oh, yeah.
But at any rate, you know, with all the unrest, they still have no issue with
sending them over.
But yeah. Enough with the politics. But I had another quick question for you.
Yeah.
Cooking with garlic butter, is that sacrilegious? Like, should you be using butter and garlic separately? Or
no, I mean, there's a place for garlic butter. You know, I would use that to emulsify a sauce, like a bolognese or something like that. You can use it as a topping, melted over like shrimp or whatever. That's kind of what a scampi would be.
My favorite show, Below Deck, they were pan cooking some filet mignons, and they used some garlic butter.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I mean, some people put it right on top of a piece of meat or something, you know, the flavor of the meat. I don't like raw garlic, the flavor of raw garlic. I think that garlic needs to be cooked. It's the same thing with raw onion. You know, people put raw onion on a burger. It's fine, you know, if you like the taste of raw onion. I just think if you grill the onion, you get much more flavor, you know, and it's easier to eat and easier to digest. You're not belching all day.
I don't laugh at me. After the show last week, I took Mom into the city to see Barry Manilow.
Of course I'm going to laugh at you. Listen, her name was Lola. She worked at the Copa.
So I write the songs. So it was pretty funny. So I was supposed to go with a good friend, Jerry Barish, and she's a very involved in the cancer community. She's an outreach center in Hewlett, 1 in 9. At any rate, she wasn't feeling well, so I had extra tickets, and I reached out to somebody. They said they were going to drive in, so it was a lot easier to drive in with them. I didn't look at the ticket. I didn't do anything. And she goes, yeah, the show starts at 8 o'clock. I said, okay.
So she goes, see, if the audience is asleep.
I'm going to make a reservation for a restaurant. And she named a couple of restaurants. Mm-hmm. The one she made the reservation at was called Bill's Burger Bar, which was literally in Rockefeller Center and half a block away from the theater.
Nice.
So her friend meets us there, and she goes, it's crazy. It's 6 o'clock. Everybody's already outside the theater. I don't get it. We sit down, and we have our meal. And then we walk. It's like 7:15. We leave the restaurant, going up to the theater.
Yeah.
And we get to the theater. It's 7:30. There's nobody outside or online. I go, do you think the concert started already?
Sure
enough, it was a 7 o'clock start. He got on at 7:15, so we didn't really miss anything. Because I know for you to miss Barry Manilow, 15 minutes would be a shock.
Be fine.
But the reason I recant the story, first of all, it was a nice night out with Mom. She could have done without a lot of the walking, considering, again, our friend, you know, has us walk 2 blocks past the restaurant and then has us walk back. And my mother's like, oh.
Let's eat already.
Oh, forget about it. But where I was going is I had a hamburger the other night up in Huntington. I had a hamburger at Bill's Burger Bar. And Bill's Burger Bar served it, the burgers, with a caramelized onion.
Yeah, nice.
And place in Huntington had slices of onion.
Yeah.
And again, I think a hybrid would have been great. It was also too much, the caramelized onions. Yeah. And the raw onion, again, I believe what you say, that could, you know, if it was cooked, it would have a little taste.
Totally.
But I just needed this somewhere in the middle.
You know, it's funny. I'm sitting here not making fun, but teasing about Barry Manilow. And, you know, meanwhile, he's living in Malibu on the water, and I'm playing gigs in Lindenhurst, you know. So who's got the last laugh?
I got to tell you, for whatever it's worth, 80-something years old. So, I guess my mom's age.
Yeah.
And over the years, I've taken Mom and Dad, you know, I always look to enjoy the fruits of my labor. Being here at the radio station, I get to be involved in a lot of live entertainment. So if it's all at Westbury Music Fair or something in the city, I love sharing that, especially with my parents.
Sure.
Because they gave me my my taste to appreciate it. But Barry's played anywhere from the UBS Arena in recent times to the Barclays Center, I believe, the Nassau Coliseum. He's been playing like a mini residency.
Yeah, he's got a huge
Radio
following.
City. So, but we sit here laughing, and it used to be just like, you know, a week's worth of shows.
Yeah.
This year, when the week's worth of shows were over, in April, they announced October.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So, and if it wasn't a sellout, it was pretty complete.
Well, God bless him, he can still do it. I mean,
for those out there, if you're planning on going in October, if you buy tickets for Sunday, it's probably a 7 o'clock slot.
Well, this is, yeah, it's getting earlier. It'll be 4:30 pretty soon, you know. When he goes to Miami, it's 4:30. But, you know, the funny thing is, I've always said this about music as opposed to athletics. I was involved in an athletic endeavor for years. And, you know, at some point your body goes, hey, Tom, you know, are you kidding? Knock it off, you know. But music is forever. As long as you're not standing up there in spandex pants with big hair, you know.
He's doing
that. And Botox.
The Vegas, formal wear. But it was just funny because, you know, at the end of the show, they always have all these streamers popping out of the sky or whatever. And we go to the parking lot, and there's people still wearing this. They're like, I guess you went to see Barry Manilow. How do you know?
Oh, yeah. No, it's the same thing with Jimmy Buffett. You see the parrot heads or whatever they call them, all dressed up. Everyone looks like a palm tree. This one looks like a boat. You know, it's like, oh, my God. Funny stuff. Hey, listen, you know, God bless them. I mean, A, there's still a market for their stuff, which is, you know, great. And B, they're still able to do it. I celebrate that. It's not my music. It's not what I would choose to listen to. But, you know, good. Go get them.
So real quick, and I know we're at the end. So we have a new radio station, 103.1 The Wolf. Country music is back here on Long Island.
Yeah.
I went to a show at the Paramount. And what's interesting is songwriters. There's so many songwriters that are young and upcoming that get their music recorded by the top guns.
Yeah.
So this guy that I saw the other night, something Larkin, he's playing a Cody Jackson song.
Oh, yeah?
And the guy's like, I guess like 30-something years old. Cody Jackson's like one of the hottest country western performers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just interesting because in rock, you don't really see that. You don't see the songwriters necessarily touring and trying to have a career.
Yeah,
but in
country,
it seems to be all the time. I saw something, somebody, Moon, wrote songs for Zac Brown, and he's busy touring. So it's very interesting to see these singer-songwriters out there performing their own songs, and it's just really cool.
Yeah, it's like the minor leagues, like the Ducks, you know what I mean? They can't make it to the big leagues, which is, there's no harm in that or shame in it, you know? You know, it's nice to see that these people have an outlet, can make a living. All right, well, on that note, we're going to have to notice that music. Yeah, tied that right in. On that note, we're going to leave the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which is life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last. And keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza, and we will see you next week.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas, and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.